Hey, well, good morning, everybody. This is Corey Worden. I'm the administrator for the ASSP healthcare practice specialty. And as always, you're listening to the Health Beat podcast. So today's episode is going to be great. We have Dave Thomas, who is the president and owner of REPS, who is a fantastic, very experienced subject matter expert, vendor, and all around expert on respiratory protection and all different pieces of equipment and information related to that. So Dave, we're excited to have you on today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Corey.
Okay, so for those of y'all that had seen our webinar earlier in the year, Dave was on our webinar to give a lot of great information and answer a lot of great questions about respiratory protection and fit testing and how that relates to the current situation in the world. So those of y'all that have seen that webinar know that he's just a great source of information. So we're going to talk about some of those things today, but to start that off, Dave, if you would, can you give us a little bit of history about yourself and REPS and, you know, where you come from, where you're going, all that good stuff.
Sounds great, Corey. Thank you. Yeah. So, I started my career actually with Dräger, a German manufacturer of respiratory protection, and they also make gas detection. And 40 years in July, it'll be 40 years since I got into the environmental health and safety instrumentation field. So it's been a fun time, and I look forward to hopefully another 10 maybe even. So I enjoy myself. I am the owner of REPS, and REPS is a manufacturer's rep / distributor of environmental health and safety instrumentation. We don't really sell PPE or fall protection or anything else. We kind of concentrate on instrumentation, and a big portion of that is respiratory fit testing equipment, Corey. So that's but I spent the first 9 years of my career selling respirators. So again, I feel like I come at the respiratory fit testing with a wealth of knowledge. I actually have the distinction of selling Dräger's first open circuit SCBA in this country back in 1981. So it's been a whirlwind. That I've seen a lot of changes through the years, but here at REPS we sell respirator fit testers, and we've sold all the three quantitative brands on the market at one time or another. We've sold them all. And it's been interesting to see, especially regarding healthcare, the changes that have come about over the last number of years.
Oh, absolutely. I know that at least in my 17 years, there's been a lot of changes and a lot of different situations that have led to that. So, to kind of compound on that, what are some of those things that you've seen change over the years as far as the equipment and the needs and whatnot?
Yeah, so certainly from I like to talk to talk about respiratory protection basically from the top all the way down to the bottom. The top being an open circuit positive pressure SCBA is pretty much the best protection that you could possibly offer anybody, or a supplied air respirator positive pressure, down to the bottom, the lowest respirator that can be called a respirator is an N95. And certainly we have seen this last couple of years a lot of changes in that market. The common man and common woman have become familiar with the term N95. They 5 years ago, maybe even 2-3 years ago, if you asked somebody what an N95 was, they'd have no idea. And now pretty much everybody knows what an N95 is. The great thing is the technology has changed. I mean, on the top end, like I say, self-contained breathing apparatus. When I got into the industry, they weighed 35 pounds. They were using steel tanks and so forth. And now, most of the ones weigh somewhere around 20, 18, 19, 20 pounds. They've got aluminum fiberglass wrapped cylinders to make them lighter and so forth. So the market has really improved. When I first started selling it, you could not talk out of an SCBA. They were, they didn't have a speaking diaphragm in them. And actually Dräger was one of the first ones to introduce a speaking diaphragm. And now you have automated systems where they're hooked up to their radios and everything else. So on the top end, you know, that has changed dramatically. But also on that, on the lower end, on the N95s, again, this has been a huge thing for years. There were two or three respirators that were dominating that market. And the biggest thing, you know, I talked about when I, in the podcast, or excuse me, in the webinar, was the change that came to the healthcare industry in 2004. So prior to 2004, as many of you probably already know, hospitals basically, for the most part, were only fit testing at least their N95s. If they had people wearing their elastomeric face pieces, they were probably doing it more often. But prior to 2004, most healthcare hospitals were fit testing the employee when they joined the hospital. And again, prior to 2004, that was all that was required. So OSHA, under the old TB standard, you had to be fit tested once when you joined the hospital, and then you never had to be fit tested again. So in 2004, when OSHA decided to change it so that all healthcare facilities would fall under the normal OSHA regulations that every other industry is falling under and require fit testing annually, that was when we saw a huge move to some better respirators, you know, more accurate. And one of the things that has spurred that on has been quantitative fit testing. And it's still a struggle. I would say anecdotally, I don't have hard evidence of this, I would say still probably at least 50% of healthcare facilities are probably doing qualitative fit testing. And while qualitative fit testing is certainly allowed by OSHA, it does have a lot of drawbacks, Corey, as you know. It's a subjective test. It's a taste test. Most people are using the saccharin or the Bitrix method. It's a taste test. And, you know, it was kind of ironic, you know, so here we are in this pandemic situation, and the CDC and NIOSH were telling everybody to do qualitative fit testing, you know, using those methods that, you know, people lost their taste. So how do you do fit testing qualitatively with a taste test when you might be bringing employees in that if they had COVID, they're not going to taste it anyways? So that's been one of the big things we've seen, is that since hospitals started moving to quantitative fit testing, the respirators have gotten better because the manufacturers were challenged. You know, so you said we went from a subjective test to an objective test, and the objective test was showing that there were many N95s that just don't fit well. And unfortunately, that's still the case. I talked about this in the webinar, but there is no fit testing component in the NIOSH approval process. So therefore, you can get a NIOSH approved N95 respirator simply based on, is the material sufficient enough to stop the right size particles? That has proved to be a folly, quite honestly, in the standard, but NIOSH, when interviewed about it, basically says they don't have the funds to be able to bring in any kind of, you know, panel. And to do it correctly, you know, you'd want at least probably 30 people or so in a panel, different sizes, shapes, face configurations, and you'd want to, you know, do some fit testing to see, you know, how do these respirators actually fit on people's faces. So, you know, obviously what happens when you have a market demand like what has happened this past year, people come out of the woodwork. And so there were people, you know, smelling a market that have never made respirators before in their lives, that all of a sudden started making respirators, and many of them just don't fit and conform to the employee's face very well. Some of them do. There's some great ones out there, but the only way to tell is to do fit testing correctly. If you're doing it qualitatively and you're doing it correctly, then you'll usually find those. But a correct qualitative fit test requires a minimum of 85 squeezes of the nebulizer, all the way up to 255 at a max. So that's per person, Corey. That's pretty tedious and can take quite a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the fit testing is definitely one of those things that to your point, I know that at least when I went into healthcare, which was in 2013, there's still a lot of people at that point that didn't understand the importance of the fit test. And like you said there, you know, you may have an employee that had been fit tested once and then either using a different respirator or they've had, you know, some kind of significant change to their facial structure or whatnot. And, you know, before they know it, that respirator is not protecting them at all. And so they have this false sense of protection. And we noticed in the last year, there's been a lot of variance, like you said, again, with the marketplace and the emergency use authorizations from the FDA and whatnot because of the COVID-19 pandemic and the residual effects on the supply line, that things like Chinese KN95s, they just flooded the market in the US. And it got to the point where a lot of people were able to buy those in bulk that had never even thought about buying a respirator before. So without the fit testing, you know, they would never know if it's actually protecting them or not, especially if they're within 6 feet of potentially infectious persons. What are your thoughts on those emergency use authorizations and the different foreign made respirators?
Yeah, it's as I say, we've seen very, very few of them be able to pass a stringent quantitative fit test. So it's, you know, as one of my colleagues likes to say, he says, you know, the people that have made good ones didn't just come out with this overnight. You know, they worked on it for years. These are companies, a lot of them. And again, I don't push one over the other or anything, but, you know, 3M and Honeywell and Kimberly-Clark and Halyard and some of these companies, you know, they've been doing this for years. They have spent a lot of dollars on research and development and trying to, you know, design respirators that do conform to the face and do protect you. And of course, one of the things I always say when I'm teaching and training is, if it doesn't matter how well the respirator fits, why wear a respirator at all? Because a poorly fitting respirator is not protecting you. It's just like you just mentioned. You get this false sense that, hey, I am being protected. And one of the great things that we've heard from customers that have moved to quantitative fit testing from qualitative fit testing is they say their employees feel better. They know that the guessing game of, yeah, I think I taste it, no, I'm not sure I taste it, yeah, I do. They know that that's kind of, it's hokey. I mean, it just, you know, because again, most people don't even do it right. If you're doing it right, it has definitely the capability of discovering, good respirators, but most people don't even do it correctly. But, you know, we hear time after time when hospitals, healthcare facilities move to quantitative fit testing that they say, you know, our employees really appreciate this. They realize this is a much more scientific test and that, you know, that they feel like, okay, this respirator really fits me well. I was able to pass this. And they can see, I mean, things like in the software of these quantitative fit testers make it easy to see. You can bring them over to what's called a real-time screen and let them see, you know, oh, well, if I adjust it this way. We just sold some units to the Mayo Clinic, actually. And the chief nursing officer came in and we hooked her up to the instruments and she didn't pass the first time. And the three ladies in employee health, they said, well, we can see, you know, you don't have it, you know, fitting real well. And so they kind of worked with her to, you know, to show her, okay, here's where you need to press down a little further. You need to smooth this out so you don't develop a channel coming down your nose and everything. And then they refit tested her again and she passed, you know, quite well. And these are the type of tools that I think the employees appreciate when they can see, okay, when I wasn't wearing it right, I didn't pass. When I wear it right, when I work, you know, to form the respirator to my face better, then I pass. So, you know, that's been one of the biggest things. The thing we've seen with all these overseas units coming in is, as I say, all that NIOSH does is they glue the respirator to a plate and they test the material. Now, just yesterday, I got a notice where they pulled another one off the market too. So here's the other thing we do have some concerns. I do have hard written proof and I can forward this to Corey. So basically they pulled the approval off of it was a Chinese N95 respirators because in their follow-up of testing the respirators, they found out that they weren't passing. Even the material wasn't passing. So this is always a danger too, is does a company submit to NIOSH respirators with good filtering material, and then down the line, we're going to save some money and we're going to perhaps purchase, you know, rolls of the material that aren't quite as good, that maybe, you know, don't pass the test. So that's, you know, those are things that everybody needs to just be aware of, is that there is a lot of junk on the market. I would recommend everybody visit the CDC website. They have great pictures now of the packaging, of the of the respirators, of a lot of counterfeit ones. So it's not, you know, there's counterfeit ones, and then there's ones that aren't counterfeit but don't, you know, fit people very well, Corey.
Definitely. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's definitely another, you know, proverbial elephant in the room, especially in the last 12 months, is the counterfeiting issue. You know, I know you mentioned, you know, rightfully so, you know, the reputable companies, you know, like 3M or Honeywell, that they put so much time and so much expertise into creating these respirators, and then only to find in the last 12 months that people have tried to, you know, just basically take their name and stamp it onto a ineffective respirator and sell it. What have y'all seen in your orbit about the counterfeiting and how that's affected organizations?
Yeah, it affects people's pocketbooks, because somebody has spent, we have a customer that, you know, was sitting there with about, you know, 200,000 bad respirators. And of course, I think, you know, some of this stuff has been very public. You know, state of California got bad respirators. So, you know, it tends to, I think, give the employees some scares, you know, when they hear about this. And it tends to, you know, concern the whole marketplace. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible thing. And certainly I know the CDC is working hard to, you know, to try and make sure those don't reach the marketplace. But unfortunately, thieves can be very smart people too. It's sad. It really is sad. So it's all the more reason why, you know, fit testing needs to be done. It needs to be done correctly, is because, you know, some of these are so good. I mean, that they're hard to tell that they're counterfeit. The ones you and I have talked before, and shared some pictures of some ones that you saw, and wow, I mean, it's scary how good they looked, like a real thing. There's something, you know, I show in my slides, my webinar there, you know, the 3N as in Nancy, not the 3M respirator, you know, someone really messed up. And then you have some that were marked as NISH approved, not NIOSH approved. They spelled it NISH. So, you know, those are easy fixes. But as you've seen, and I've started to see, there's some that, you know, it's, other than perhaps talking to the manufacturer and giving some lot numbers and checking, and then, like I say, just doing some fit testing correctly, it's sometimes, some of it's hard to tell. It's very scary, quite honestly.
Definitely. In my experience, and from, you know, from people in my orbit that I've spoken to, and stories I've heard from colleagues, you know, around the country and whatnot, there's been a lot of that, where even direct representatives from the companies, you know, have had to check lot numbers to make sure that they know if something's counterfeit or not. The counterfeiters have gotten really good at that. So one thing we always recommend, you know, with our practice specialty members and people that we work with, is that, especially right now with large quantity purchases, and especially if it's not from a vendor that they normally work with and have a history with, you know, it's always best to double check that. And like you said, companies like 3M, you know, they have a dedicated department that's working on that right now, a fraud and price counterfeiting and price gouging department that can check those things. So it's always better to double check. And like you said, the fit test is always the last resort, you know. What I always tell our teams is, you know, we validate the product before we buy it. then we inspect it when we get it, and we validate it again with the company, and then we do the fit testing, and then we still do the seal check before we put it on and take it into the hot area, you know. So between all of those checks, then we should be able to mitigate any exposures or rule out any ineffective product. But honestly, it's kind of a bummer that all that's needed. You know, it just kind of a testament to the state of the world right now. So with that being said, you know, I know we kind of talked about this a little bit. So the COVID-19 pandemic, we're going on almost a year and a half now, almost 18 months of it. So I know you talked about how quantitative fit testing has benefited, you know, the reliability and validity of fit testing, and how we're able to better assess the respirators on the market, and people now have a better understanding of how fit testing works and how respirators provide that protection. So in the big picture, how do you think that the COVID-19 pandemic has affected the respiratory protection market, and how that's going to continue to affect it as the pandemic kind of goes into this next phase with vaccinations?
Yeah, so I do think, Corey, that you know, there's a lot of people that are vaccinated and have told me this personally that I'm probably not going to still go out, you know, with a without a mask on, and I completely understand that. You know, I have a wife who's going through some immune compromise, going through some things, and you know, we're both vaccinated, but you know, if we leave the house, you know, we're wearing masks, we're wearing. I mean, she's quite honestly, she wears N95s. I am able to get her some N95s, and I put her in N95s anytime we go out. I think you'll see that, you know, again, it's been a worldwide awakening. So, you know, everybody is familiar with this. You know, we're fortunate. We're in a developed country like the United States, where, you know, we have the capability to make these things. We have the capability to test these things. And the supply is now coming back. You know, people got mad. What, you know, why wasn't there enough of respirators? Well, you know, again, it was a worldwide, it is a worldwide demand. You know, nobody anticipated this. I mean, the 3M, Honeywell, you know, never ever in their life probably anticipated that the numbers of respirators that would be needed, you know, would be needed. And so, you know, they you know, people say, oh, they were caught. Well, okay, they were caught, but again, it's massive. But the good thing is these people have responded. You know, one of the better fitting masks on the market is a 3M 1870 Plus. Well, those were made in the UK. The 3M did not have a plant in the United States that made those respirators. So that respirator was being used by a lot of healthcare systems, a lot of hospitals, and boom, they couldn't get them. I mean, it just, you know, the UK did similar things to, you know, what our country did, is they shut down the export of, you know, we're going to take care of our own country first. And so, but 3M responded, and they have opened a new plant in the United States that is making those. They also have another one that's not FDA approved. It's NIOSH approved, but not, so it couldn't be used in surgery, that is similar. So, I mean, we do hear that the supply is coming back, but you know, the problem is those respirators are also not the least expensive ones. And what, you know, you always have to a little bit of a battle sometimes with purchasing, who's, you know, someone's come in and shown them this, you know, 20 cent, you know, 50 cent respirator, and you know, it doesn't fit real well. You know, you and I have seen that before, where, you know, sometimes you have to be very, very careful just shopping on price, because it's you're not going to probably get as good a fitting respirator at you know, 25, 50 cents per respirator as you might at $1 or $1.25 a respirator. But you know, I think, you know, right now the respirator manufacturers, the Honeywells, the 3Ms, the Halyards, Kimberly-Clark's, they are all, I'm sure, working at full capacity from what I've heard. You know, just trying to still get the supply out there. But I think, you know, I think it's moving, or has moved, you know, like I say, it's been a year and a half, and I think it's moving in the right direction. At least the number of the hospitals that I've talked to, they say, yeah, we're getting supply back, we have respirators, but there's still some. I mean, when you talk to some of the perhaps smaller, and I don't deal with these people for certain, so I want to be careful what I say, but you know, you have your large you know, companies, your Medlines and your Cardinal Health and these big hospital supply companies, and you know, they have only maybe so many respirators coming in. And who are they going to take care of? They're going to take care of their bigger customers. So I think sometimes some of the, you know, smaller, medium and smaller type hospitals may still be struggling just because they don't have the clout, you know, with their supplier that, you know, the competitor who has, you know, 10 hospitals in their chain might have as a single, you know, hospital, perhaps a rural hospital or something like that. So I do think sometimes there's a problem in those type of smaller facilities.
Yeah, definitely a lot of variables there. Have you seen, in your experience, I know we've talked about this with a lot of other podcast guests and webinar guests. Have you seen organizations that historically work with N95, you know, filter and face piece respirators have transitioned to elastomeric respirators?
Yeah, so it's, yeah, great question, Corey. Yes, I know during, you know, certainly during the height of things, a lot of people did move that way. I'm still trying to find out whether those are permanent moves or whether those were temporary moves. So yes, I mean, certainly we had folks calling us and saying, can you get an elastomeric half face piece respirator with HEPA filters? But I will tell you, those became very scarce as well. Because that, you know, that was the case. A lot of people, if you couldn't get N95s, they were stepping up to you know, regular elastomeric rubber half faces and then trying to put, you know, the HEPA filters on those. And those became very, very scarce as well. I think, again, that supply has come back. I would assume, again, that the factories, the various factories are working at full capacity and trying to do that. But yeah, that's a great question. I mean, and, you know, a lot of folks moved into PAPRs too, but you know, that is certainly a whole different ball game as far as, you know, keeping maintenance on PAPRs versus disposable respirators and so forth, as is an elastomeric. So, I mean, you bring in a whole new system. I mean, you have to clean elastomeric, you have to disinfect them and so forth. So they're not disposable. So you're going to, most, you know, hospitals were not set up to be able to take care of that. I know some of them outsourced it, you know, brought in a vendor to help them, you know, take care of their respirators, set up a cleaning station, you know, give them a room to, you know, set up disinfection and so forth. So yeah, it's a great question. A lot of people did go to more. What, you know, whether they will in the long run, because I think, say, I mean, you know, budgets are a real thing, expenses are a real thing. Of course, they still need to be fit tested. But I you know, whether that will become permanent and people will continue to do that, I don't know that, Corey, yet. It's a great question. I'll probably try and reach out after you asked it to see, you know, some of the folks we know that did move that way, whether this is something they anticipate staying with, or once the supply comes back, will they change back to disposable respirators?
Yeah, it's been interesting how people have adapted. You know, it's like we said, you know, a lot of variables there. And I know we've had that conversation a lot in the healthcare communities over the years, you know, even before the COVID-19 pandemic, where we would have certain organizations that would historically use N95s, but they would have employees for various reasons. You know, some would be, you know, HR accommodations for religious purposes, or they would have an ADA accommodation or whatnot. And so they would use a powered air purifying respirator, you know, a positive pressure. And so that way the employees could, you know, they could either have facial hair or whatever the reason was. And so in that context, we would get a lot of questions where, you know, they would say, well, this seems a lot easier. You know, we don't have to do the fit test and we don't have to worry about enforcing these, you know, preparedness measures to use the respirator. But then that would also lead to the conversation about, well, you know, in turn, like you said, you know, there's the maintenance procedures and the disinfecting and the consumables. You know, you got the batteries and you got the filters and then of course there's the overhead cost, you know, that comes with implementing these. You know, it's a lot different from a disposable N95 versus the just the startup cost of putting a PAPR in place. So there's definitely a give and take there and a cost versus benefit for everything. So it's interesting to see, like you said, to see how people are going to continue after the context of the pandemic changes.
I would be very, again, just in my, you know, my history and talking and visiting with the hospitals all over the South, that we, you know, we don't see too many hospitals. I've heard of one, let's put it this way. I've heard of one that the infectious control coordinator told me they went to PAPRs only. You know, that was all they were offering their employees. And again, this was actually pre-COVID. So whether they were able to obtain that many and take care of that many during COVID, it would be very interesting. You know, a PAPR, I believe, runs somewhere between like $1,200 and $1,500 a piece, I think. As I say, I don't sell them, so I'm not 100% sure on that, but those are some numbers I've heard. So again, that, yeah, it, you know, one, the upfront cost versus a $1.50 good N95 respirator is certainly you know, there, but it's the ongoing cost, as you say, the disinfecting, the maintaining the batteries, the cleaning of the unit, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, we normally see it. Most hospital systems that I've called on and worked with, we normally will see them have some PAPRs, like you said, for religious folks. There was a thing, I don't know, Corey, if I shared that recently, you know, with it, that came out of the UK, that apparently has a lot of Sikh doctors, you know, so doctors of the Sikh religion. And of course, they, you know, like you said, for religious purposes, they don't shave their beard. And what this actually had them do, and there was a whole paper written on it, was they had them actually wrap the beard in, like, for lack of a better term, they may have another term, but almost like yoga bands. So those, you know, stretchy rubber bands, they would have them kind of wrap the beard and then tie it at the top of their head. And then they would put the N95 respirator. And this this paper shows that they did qualitative and quantitative fit testing and actually had pretty good results. Now, I'm not, you know, OSHA has not approved this. NIOSH has not approved it. I mean, this is not a method that can be used, quote unquote, legally. But it was kind of interesting to see their solution to this problem. But I think that the better solution, you know, with that is to go ahead and actually, you know, if you have doctors or employees that, you know, you're not going to require to shave, and just again to make sure everybody understands, you can require them to shave. I mean, there's teeth in the OSHA regulation, Appendix A. You know, they are to be have no facial hair where the ceiling edge of the respirator sits, and it can be a condition of employment. You can tell the employee, you know, when you hire them, this is part of your job description. You will or may have to wear an N95, and therefore you have to be able to, one, pass a fit test, and two, you must be clean shaven when you're wearing it. I will say, you know, again, we call on other than healthcare, we call on you know, refineries and chemical plants and food plants and so forth. And many other companies are much, much stricter on it than the healthcare, you know, has tended to be. But, you know, I think some of that was just simply because we didn't have a whole lot of hazards in the past. You know, TB, you know, mumps, measles was some of the reasons N95s were being worn in healthcare before. But, you know, the SARS came along, the bird flu came along, and now COVID-19. And it's really important that the employees, you know, have great respirators to wear that fit them and protect them. I mean, we have to protect our healthcare workers.
Absolutely. It's interesting you say that too. That's been one of the conversations that we've had over the years, you know, is, you know, the fundamental, of course, of being a safety professional is the hazard identification and the risk assessment. And it's always been that ongoing conversation to make sure that everybody involved understands where the potential for a respiratory hazard is, you know, whether it be something as common as influenza or whether it be, like you said, tuberculosis. And then, of course, there was the question back in 2014 with Ebola, you know, whether Ebola is a respiratory hazard or only a droplet, you know, droplet body fluid bloodborne pathogen hazard. And you know, the consensus across the board was, of course, it's not known to be a respiratory hazard, but where the wear the N95 to protect yourself. You know, there's just so much body fluid and blood involved with a late stage Ebola patient. So there's so many variables there. And that's one of the thing also, and when I was in the service, you know, there was a lot of questions. It didn't really become a widespread conversation, but at least in our community with, you know, counter chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and emergency management, was when terrorist groups in Iraq, they started using chlorine, you know, as an agent for attacks.
Right.
Then the military, the respirator at the time, the MCE2AP, which is an air purifying respirator, negative pressure, you know, there had to be a different canister for chlorine. And so eventually they changed to what they have now, which has a hazmat filter as well as a seaburn filter, organic vapor and whatnot. But just knowing what those hazards are and being able to communicate that is just so important. So with that being said, so now you've been doing this, you said, like, you said, what, 40 years?
In July, I will have been doing this for 40 years. Yes. So, like I said, 9 years working for a manufacturer of respirators. I did take 3 years off where I was in this field, but was selling more general safety PPE and things like that. And then after those 3 years, I got back into the respiratory world with quantitative fit testers. So I've been selling quantitative fit testers for about 28 years now. And so, yeah, it's a long time.
Yeah, that's outstanding. So in all that time, so you've seen a lot of things come and go. You've seen a lot of changes. You've seen a pandemic, you know, the first one of its scale since 1918. So knowing all this, if you had every safety professional, you know, on a Microsoft Teams meeting or on a Zoom call at once, what is the couple of one or two or three things that you'd like to impart to all of them that you'd say, you know, just kind of shake them and say, I need you to understand this. What would you say about that?
Yeah, no, it's great. I think, you know, and I will say, you know, it's a little different with positive pressure respirators and things like that. You know, people, I mean, fit is always important. So yeah, I'll give you a little background on that too. You know, it used to be years ago, the firefighters, they wouldn't, oh, it's okay, I'm positive pressure, okay? You know, nothing's getting inside my mask. Well, that is, you know, I don't need to worry about fit as much. But here's the thing that they didn't always consider was, well, if the respirator is not fitting you well and it's leaking out because it doesn't fit you well, then you're using up that bottle much faster. You know, so when I first got into the industry, it was always a brag when you called on some of the fire departments and so forth that, you know, hey, you know, I could suck down that bottle. That was the terms they used. You know, I sucked that down, that 30-minute bottle in 15 minutes. But I always wondered, you know, are you really breathing that hard for that long? Or is it just that your respirator doesn't fit you well? It's not that you're not wearing the right size respirator. You're losing it through, you know, leakage. So I mean, that's something certainly that I would, you know, want to make sure everybody knows, is that, again, a respirator is only effective if it's properly worn and properly, you know, as you mentioned, you have to make sure you have the right canisters. If it's a negative pressure respirator, make sure you're using the right, you know, canisters or cartridges. And then it fits you. You know, another anecdotal story, you know, I had at a fire department years ago, we went into the fit test training. They'd bought an instrument from us, and a young female firefighter comes up, and they only had medium face pieces and large face pieces. And so she comes up and I look at her and I could see her, and she's like straining to pass the fit test. She's basically dropping her chin, kind of elongating her face. And the fire chief was there. He goes, "What are you doing?" She goes, "This is what I have to do to get good protection and to make sure this respirator, you know." So, I mean, you know, they do make small face pieces. And he goes, "I am so sorry." He says, "I will order some small face pieces." But, you know, again, this is, you know, I guess if there's anything I would impart to anybody is that, again, fit matters. If if the respirator is not fitting the employee well, then it may not be doing its job. And as you mentioned earlier, Corey, it may be giving the employee a false sense of security. And that's what we don't want. We want the employee protected. We want them to know that they're protected, and we want them to wear the respirator. I apologize. I mean, not if they don't need to, but you know, if it's necessary, we want them to know how to do it. And annual fit testing, you know, people will say sometimes, well, you know, I rarely wear a respirator. You know, I don't really have to. Well, it's all the more, you know, reason. And I know, you know, again, I've been at this long enough that, you know, the healthcare fought, the Wicker Amendment came out when OSHA first said they were going to require healthcare to do annual fit testing. You know, it was fought real hard. I think it was Senator or Congressman Wicker out of Mississippi did the Wicker bill, and they tried to pass it so that it wouldn't be required. You know, I think we are here 16 years later or so since that. I'm probably glad that that did not pass, and that healthcare is being held to the higher standard of respirator fit testing to make sure the employees are wearing the right size. That's the other thing. You know, you mentioned, what have I seen through the years? So, you know, in the late 90s and so forth, if you walked into a hospital, the 3M 1860 was pretty much standard. There was some other stuff, but it was a 3M 1860, and there were two sizes of it. There was a regular and a small. Okay. And those are still available today, but there are, you know, some of the manufacturers out there have five or six different sizes of N95s. So I think that's the big thing that quantitative fit testing has helped determine, is that the manufacturers have been called on by the customers, by you guys, by the healthcare industry, and said, you know, this respirator doesn't fit everybody. You know, this respirator perhaps doesn't. I need some different sizes. I mean, you walk through the halls of a hospital and you see people that are, you know, 5'5" and 110 pounds, and you see people that are 6'5" and 250 pounds. I mean, people come in all sizes and shapes. Trying to, you know, throw everybody into one size respirator is just not realistic. I know purchasing sometimes likes that, you know, we're going to buy just these. Well, no, you know, okay, if we can get everybody to pass a fit test on those, then we can buy just those. But that's, again, rarely the case. You normally have to have at least several different sizes, it's different manufacturers. You maybe have some 3Ms, maybe you have some Halyards, maybe you have some Moldexes. You know, you might have several different ones there. And I know that's going to be difficult. And this, again, one of the things you can do with fit testing is, you know, you can give the nurse, the employee a card. This is what you're supposed to grab. When you go to the closet or you go to the cabinet to grab an N95, this is the one that you were able to pass on. This is the right one. That's so important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I can, to kind of compound on that, that's also been a huge part of the last year's work, has been making sure that everybody involved, you know, at this point, when I say everybody involved, you know, that includes the general population as well, is making sure everybody understands that for those that are in that hazard area that need the respirator, making sure they have one that'll fit, and they have a fit test, and they have a seal check. And then for everybody who's not in the hazardous area, but they're using source control, you know, face mask for source control, droplet containment, making sure they understand that that's not going to provide the protection that an N95 or a respirator would. So that's been a huge talking point, just to make sure that the education is there. Have y'all seen a lot of that as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you go on the American Industrial Hygiene Association, you know, the IH national organization, and they have and I apologize, I'm too old to remember the exact terms, but a chat board or whatever you want to call it, forget about it. I apologize, I'm using the wrong word there. But, you know, they have a board where people can post questions and things. And quite honestly, it is, you know, over the last year and a half, and I read it almost daily. They show up in my email box every morning. These are certified industrial hygienists, you know, people with master's degrees and doctorate degrees and you know, very, very knowledgeable people. And there's a lot of, you know, there's controversy there, people, but I think they are all pretty much in agreement that, you know, people's telling you that a mask, whether it be you know, a cloth mask or whatever thing, you know, will do what a respirator will do. That has probably been the biggest message that group is trying to, you know, get out, is those are not respirators. They are exactly as you said, Corey, they are for droplet, containment and to help spread, stop that spread, but they do not, you know, and you can Google and you can see all kinds of, things on Yahoo and so forth of people showing how the particles are coming right through those, as far as, some of the testing and so forth. So they're not respirators and they don't fit tight. So therefore, if you take a deep breath and you have, you have particles around you, they're going to find the path of least resistance and they're going to come in. When you hook up a quantitative fit tester and go to the real time, you see that. You've seen me do that demonstration where you pull the respirator away from your face for a minute and take a breath and look what happens. All of a sudden you see the particles inside the mask. Inside the respirator, make sure I use the correct term. But it's been a trying year. I do think, I attend the state infectious control shows, a lot of the hospitals, and of course do all the safety shows, industrial hygiene shows. And healthcare has come a long, long way since the 1990s and so forth, where again most of the fit testing wasn't being done correctly. It was a short, let me squeeze this a few times, you taste it, oh, okay, you're good, this respirator fits you. So I mean, we're getting past that for the most part. Like I said, there's still folks that are taking shortcuts, but it people are understanding the importance of a well-fitting respirator.
Definitely, that's very, very valid and important. So, Dave, it's been a great conversation. I know that you're extremely busy, so I don't want to hold you up too long, but we sure appreciate your time today. Is there anything else you'd like to put out for our members today?
No, Corey, I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk to your members, and I'm here. I don't know if I'm here to help. I look forward. I enjoy this. This is, it's my vocation, but also my advocation. And I just enjoy talking about respirators. I enjoy talking about, protecting people. And so I do appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come and talk. And if there's any questions, I'm more than willing to give my phone number or email. I'm happy to help anybody I can.
That's great. We sure appreciate it. And likewise with your webinar earlier this year, that was great. And today's conversation has been great. So we'll definitely stay in touch. And as always, likewise, where to find us. And please always feel free to keep in touch with us at the ASSP Healthcare Practice Specialty. But with that being said, so our next, excuse me, with the healthcare practice specialty, for those of you that are interested, which we hope you are, our next webinar is going to be coming up on May 14th. We have Sean Galloway from ProAct Safety. He's going to be talking about leadership and culture change. That's going to be great. And then after that, on June 4th, we have Dr. Pam Hunter, who's going to be talking about her dissertation research on workplace violence prevention in healthcare. And then following that, on June 25th, we have Todd DeVoe, who's a certified emergency manager and the host of the EM Weekly podcast, and he's going to be doing a webinar about emergency management in the healthcare context, including the ICS structure and NIMS and all that good stuff. And then we have more coming up after that. And then, of course, we have more podcasts. So if you haven't seen it yet, we also have recently done a great conversation with Dr. Amber Mitchell about bloodborne pathogens and needle stick injury prevention. A lot of great topics there. And then we have some others that will be coming up real soon. If anybody has any topics you'd like to see, have anything you'd like to see as far as resources, webinar episodes or whatnot, feel free to let us know. We're always happy to hear. You can reach us on the ASSP discussion boards, on the ASSP communities, on our LinkedIn page. And we have a new Twitter, which is the little at sign, ASSP HCPS, so ASSP Healthcare Practice Specialty. And feel free to catch us on any of those anytime. So with that being said, we'll sign off for today, but we hope to talk to you all real soon. Thank you.